Chapter 14. Once the ceremony was over, and the new couple had finished kissing, which took longer than it had to, the celebration jumped straight to no-fucks-given dancing. Food was provided via a buffet along the sides of the room, and speeches were made intermittently by microphone from the main stage. In a lot of ways, had the context been very different, it would have been a great evening. I'd loved Bridge's wedding because I loved Bridge, but sitting around while elderly relatives made corny jokes over a meal that, while exquisite, you'd never have ordered in a restaurant, wasn't exactly the way most people I knew would choose to spend a Saturday. A gigantic party in a train tunnel with live music and speeches largely made by professional cabaret artists, on the other hand, was. Or rather, it had been. Now I spent my Saturdays doing boyfriendly things, like hoovering the living room and going to art galleries and or IKEA, occasionally fielding calls from the James Royce Royces because baby Jay had done something so unbearably adorable that they had to tell everyone immediately. And it wasn't that I missed my party days, at least not the way they'd ended with me drinking, dancing and fellating my way into oblivion. But it had been good for a while, and looking back, it didn't feel so much like something I'd grown beyond as something that had been taken from me. So I looked around the room with this weird mix of nostalgia and... Actually, maybe it was just nostalgia, but in a serious pain for something lost sense. And then I looked at Oliver, and his reaction was very much not nostalgia. It was the opposite of nostalgia. Like, fuck this shit, Alger, or something. I think he'd have been more comfortable at a bullfight. "Are you hating this?" I asked. He had to raise his voice to be heard over the music.
"By what metric?"
Any metric?
"I believe I can honestly say," he shouted, in that nightclub nobody can hear this because nobody can hear anything way, "that I cannot imagine a scenario in which I would enjoy watching two people I don't know get married in a disused train tunnel full of repetitive electronica and flashing lights more than I currently am."
I tried to be cool with that, or even to be flattered by it. After all, it would have been a bit weird if my boyfriend had been super happy at the wedding of my arsehole ex. But the truth was, the arsehole ex wasn't the only issue. This issue was that Oliver was... well. Okay, this was difficult. Because the reason I'd needed to date someone like him to begin with was that I'd needed to distance myself from the parts of queer culture that looked bad to a certain kind of rich, straight person. And while I'd come to realise that Oliver was more than a respectable job and a wholesome jumper, it still weirded me out that he found so little value in what I'd always instinctively thought was our community.
"You don't feel, like, connected to any of this?" I asked, even though I already knew the answer.
He winced.
"I wish I did, and I'm sure I should, but no."
"It can be fun, though," I tried. "I mean, isn't it great to be in a place where you know nobody's judging you for who you are?" There was whatever passed for silence in a room full of wedding noise. I got that sinking sensation that I hadn't had for a while, where I knew I'd said the wrong thing, but I wasn't sure how.
"Lucien..."
Oliver had a pained, sincere look about him, and I wished I'd kept my mouth shut.
"I love that you feel accepted by this world, and I'd never want to take that away from anyone. But I've never felt any of..."
He made a slightly helpless gesture.
"This is for me."
"It could be for you." That probably wasn't right. "I mean, it is for you." That probably wasn't right either. He leaned a little closer to my ear so that he could stop having to yell complex things about his relationship to identity politics over wedding music.
"I understand that you're trying to make me feel included, but I'm afraid you're doing the opposite."
Fuck. How was I doing the opposite?
"I didn't mean to," I whisper yelled. "I just mean, you know,
You've got a right to be part of this.
That's not the reassurance you think it is.
Shit, this was turning into Drag Race all over again. Can't you let it be? I tried. It was the wrong thing to try.
Lucien.
He was using my name a lot, which was never a good sign.
I absolutely don't want to denigrate anybody's values, but places like this are, well, I'm sure for people who like to express themselves in this kind of way that they're very empowering. But for me...
Now he ran a hand through his hair, also not the best of signs.
It's like this whole event is telling me I'm doing my identity wrong if I'm not draping myself in rainbows at every opportunity. Ironically, it makes me feel judged.
It was nothing he hadn't said before. It was just extra weird for him to be saying it at my ex-boyfriend's wedding, while we were surrounded by my ex-friends. Because there was a part of me that still belonged here, and hated that he didn't.
I think that's just in your head.
He gave a cool blink.
I'm aware. But I'm also aware that I've told you on more than one occasion that I don't feel especially represented by this kind of thing, and you've consistently failed to believe me. So I sometimes think it might not be quite as much in my head as all that.
Fuck. Were we having a fight? Was this a fight? Had I tried to show off my amazing barrister boyfriend to my asshole ex and wound up having an embarrassing fight in the middle of said ex's fabulous queer wedding? Oh my God, Oliver! I hugged him in the hope of de-escalating. I didn't mean to make you feel... Shit. I'm a crappy boyfriend, and you're so great for doing this for me. And you don't have to like anything you don't want to like, and we can go if you...
Luke? Luke O'Donnell?
I turned to see a man with an obscenely expensive suit and no sense of timing, making his way around the edge of the dance floor towards us. It took me a moment to recognise him. Jonathan? We didn't hug. Even at university, Jonathan had never been the hugging type. Honestly, we hadn't massively got on account of him being driven by a passionate desire for success and me being driven by a passionate desire for naps. He was one of those people who had sort of aged laterally, in that he looked almost exactly the same as when he was 20. He'd somehow picked up a single grey streak in his hair, which gave him a bit of a werewolf vibe, only not in a sexy way. But otherwise, he was the same lanky, grumpy git I vaguely remembered. He stared at me for a long moment.
I have to say, you are the last person I expected to see here.
Same. You don't even like Miles.
Since when is I don't like you an excuse to get out of a wedding?
His mouth, which was a sneery kind of mouth, got sneerier.
I mean, you felt obliged to show up, and Miles literally sold you out of a Daily Express. What chance did I have?
The thing about Jonathan was that he'd occupied a strange position in our friendship group. Someone told me once that the reason Christmas cracker jokes are so bad is that they're designed to be shared with the whole family, and it's way easier to get everyone to agree that a joke is awful than to get them to agree it's funny. Jonathan was a human Christmas cracker joke. We all hated him, and we were pretty sure he hated us, but somehow that brought us together. Unfortunately, without that context, he was just a mildly unpleasant man. Then again, so was I. Anyway, I gave a sickly smile. This is Oliver Blackwood, my boyfriend. Oliver, this is Jonathan... And I couldn't remember his surname. This is Jonathan, who I knew at university, but we didn't like each other.
Good to know you're still a cock, Luke, said Jonathan.
Strangely more in his element now I was asking him to be polite to an asshole in a suit, Oliver offered his hand.
Lovely to meet you. If it helps, Luke didn't like me either.
I like you now, I protested. Oliver laughed.
I should bloody well hope so. It's been 2 years.
So...
Jonathan had always had the eyebrows of an angry cartoon character, and now they knitted together ominously.
What didn't he like about you?
He thought I was boring.
Me too, said Jonathan.
Oliver, I didn't, I lied. I just thought you were, you know, overachieving and a bit serious.
And too good for me. But I was fucked if I was admitting that in front of Jonathan.
Being overachieving and serious are very underrated qualities.
You could never tell if Jonathan was joking. He delivered everything in the same unplaceably accented monotone. For whatever reason, Oliver had concluded that was both a joke and one he could join in on.
Perhaps we can exchange details. Then we can meet up someday and discuss our favourite shades of beige or compare pension plans.
Jonathan glanced at me. Keep this one, Luke. He's all right. Anyway, what are you doing these days?
I work for a charity that protects bugs that eat shit. 2 years ago, I'd have cringed. Now I like to think I was owning it. Okay, renting it. You?
I run a shop.
I opened my mouth, then closed it again.
You run a shop? Yeah, big building. People come in and buy things. I know your parents are pop stars, but this is basic stuff.
How I'd known this man for 10 years and not punched him once, I'd never quite worked out. I suppose the 7-year gap in the middle helped.
I know what a shop is, you utter turd. I just thought you'd be in finance or something, not selling groceries. I don't sell groceries. I sell bath and bedroom furniture because people will always need it. I've got 3 stores, about to open a 4th. And, yeah, I'd probably earn more in the city, but I'd have to work for some prick with a hedge fund.
From where I'm standing, I said, you're still working for some prick. In hindsight, we didn't know each other well enough anymore for me to be making that kind of joke, but I was a bit on edge on account of Miles and how Oliver and I hadn't quite got a resolution on Doesn't Like Rainbows Gate.
Fuck off, O'Donnell.
He turned back to Oliver.
Nice meeting you.
And you, returned Oliver,
because he was a better person than me and didn't randomly insult people at weddings.
Sorry, I said, once Jonathan had vanished into the crowd. I'd say I don't know what happened, but he was always like that.
Oliver gave me a faintly chiding look, which I'd have found sexy if it had happened in the bedroom.
As I suspect, were you?
No, I just act like a wanker. He really is one.
I would say wankers are in the eye of the beholder, but that raises some disquieting images.
I gave an involuntary blink.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to think about Jonathan wanking, let alone wanking in my eye.
In an effort to be a good boyfriend, I asked Oliver once more if he wanted to go, and he told me he was fine, and not dog-in-a-burning-room fine. And I still wasn't quite ready to draw a line under the evening. Still hadn't quite got whatever nebulous thing I was hoping to get and couldn't describe, but was increasingly sure I'd know when I saw it. So we stayed, and for a while we bounced around half-forgotten acquaintances, repeating the ritual of how are you, what have you been doing, all over again. Over the next couple of hours, I caught up with at least 6 people I hadn't seen in the best part of a decade, and found that they were almost all either city bankers or performing artists, with precious little middle ground. Most of them were also married, and I wasn't sure how I felt about any of that. We were on our 2nd or 3rd circuit when I almost collided with Roger, or Heather, I suppose, given she wasn't performing, and since she'd taken off the moustache, I was fairly confident we were back in a she-her pronoun space.
Fuck, Luke, she said. I did not expect to see you here.
I'd been hearing that a lot, in tones ranging from pleasantly surprised to unpleasantly surprised. Heather, though, sounded genuinely shaken. We'd been close back in the day, but she'd been one of Miles's best friends, and she'd really vocally sided with him at the time, which, for some reason, hadn't gone down well with me. I gave a limp shrug. Yeah, but bygones, I guess. Her eyes narrowed. I'd forgotten quite how good her bullshit detector was.
I don't buy that for a second. What Miles did to you was fucked up, and you have every right not to forgive him.
You forgave him pretty quick, I pointed out. Beside me, Oliver was sliding very quietly into "I am not a part of this conversation" space. She stuffed her hands very firmly into the pockets of her leather jacket, somehow projecting an attitude of apologetic defiance.
I stuck by him because I was more his friend than yours, and we're all entitled to our mistakes, even massive mistakes that hurt people. But I'd have completely got it if you never wanted to see him again, or me for that matter.
One day, I was going to have someone fuck me over and then not play the "you've got every right to be angry" card to guilt me out of being angry. I'm sure that would have made things much easier for you.
Is that why you're here, then?
The look on her face was still 80-20 between suspicion and regret.
Are you just Banquo's ghosting at us?
And that stung a little, because I wasn't quite ready to admit that what went down between me and Miles had affected other people as well. People that, once upon a time, I'd cared about, and who'd cared about me. Honestly, I said, I'm not great at self-awareness, but I think it started as a sincere attempt to be over it. Oliver was maintaining his tactful silence, but he laid a hand softly on my shoulder.
And are you?
Asked Heather. I had no way to answer that yet. Can I get back to you after the wedding?
For what it's worth, she told me, I'm sorry things went down the way they did.
I sighed. Not your fault.
No, but it was still a mess, and I could have handled it better. Just at the time, I don't know, I felt like Miles was getting a lot of shit and...
Wait a minute. I'd had my sex life splashed all over the news of whatever. How was Miles getting shit? She shot me a withering look.
Oh, come on. You know what Priya is like. You know what Bridget is like. You know what James Royce is like. They might have had good reasons, but they were fucking vicious. Not just to Miles, but to everybody who didn't directly take your side as loudly and vocally as they did. So, yeah, I stood up for him, and I said a bunch of things that I shouldn't have, and...
She took a deep breath.
I'm sorry.
I'd never looked at it like that before. Not that I'd ever had any obligation to, because I was still very much the shaftee in this situation. But while Miles had wound up with custody of most of our associates and acquaintances, the Jonathans of the world, I had taken most of our real close friends with me. As alone as I'd felt, as little as I'd appreciated them for it, I'd always had all the people that mattered in my corner. Fuck. Was I going to have to be nuanced about this? Being nuanced about things sucked. I guess I see how that was tough. And probably a lot of us could have behaved better.
Thanks.
Unexpectedly, she hugged me.
This must be really strange for you.
I said, and how? But I hugged her back in a way that I hoped communicated something more along the lines of, this is weird and complex, but ultimately I think positive, and I'm glad we got a chance to reconnect, even though it was in less than ideal circumstances, and I wish our past had involved less bullshit, even though neither of us was directly responsible for the bullshit in question. When we'd parted, with the usual promises to definitely stay in touch for real this time, no lie, for serious, Oliver slipped his arm around me. I hope I wasn't too unhelpful, he whispered as we wandered off. That seemed quite intense, and I was concerned I'd be intruding. Yeah, it was kind of intense and I gave a non-specific hand wave.
Blah.
Ah, yes, Oliver agreed. The blah will get you every time. I guess. Apparently my mouth had more words to release. I guess I hadn't really thought about how big the whole Miles thing was. How many people it affected who weren't, you know, me. I was too busy getting wasted and feeling hard done by. I understand getting wasted and feeling hard done by are what your early 20s are all about. I gave him a skeptical look. I suppose you spent yours studying for the bar and, I don't know, developing a deep sense of altruism. Don't talk nonsense, Lucien. His lips twitched. I've always had a deep sense of altruism. The annoying thing was, he probably had. Yeah, and I bet if your boyfriend had sold your sex life to a newspaper, you'd have been all, it's okay, you have hurt me, but you are entitled to make mistakes. I'm not sure any newspapers would want to pay for my sex life. Hey, I poked him in the shoulder. Don't do yourself down. You're a saucy legal stud, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. He considered this. Of course, prior to 1967, I'd have been a saucy illegal stud. Very illegal. You'd have been minus 20. I meant for reasons of orientation rather than age. Well, that was embarrassing. Oh, right. Yeah. Pausing our wedding circuit, I tipped up his chin and kissed him lightly on the lips. Fine. You're a better gay than me. It's not a competition, Lucien, he said loftily. But, yes. Yes, I am. I kissed him again. I think you're a better most things than me. You know that's not true at all. Name... I was about to say three, but then I remembered the way Bridge had outmaneuvered me. Five. Only five? He asked. Very well. You can eat a dessert without feeling unnecessarily guilty about it. Wait. In my head, Oliver had just laughed it off, but in reality he'd gone for it. Of course he'd gone for it. You don't have... You have a good relationship with your mother. You don't blurt out insulting things at people you like. Have you met me? That one doesn't count. Fair enough. You don't need a live-in boyfriend to remind you what work-life balance is. I think, I said, you'll find I do. It's just the other way round. You were always good at your job, Lucien. You sometimes pretended not to be, but you were. I grinned. Are we counting that as one or two? Neither. That was justifying the previous assertion. Malad, I added for him. Shush, he told me, getting all stern and exciting. That's three so far. You're more willing to do things that frighten you, and, as we've established, you can dance. Okay. I narrowed my eyes. Name seven. He didn't miss a beat. You're slightly taller and more annoying. Oh, for fuck's sake, I muttered. I completely love you. And thank you for coming today. I know it's, like, the opposite of your scene. It's fine. He gazed at me in that sincere, silver-eyed, Olivery way. I'd say I'd do anything for you, but as a lawyer, I'd never use such imprecise language. I am, however, happy to accompany you to an ostentatious wedding for an unpleasant person. Did you get what you needed? I sighed. Honestly, I'm not sure what that would even have been, unless you count Miles pooing himself on the way to the altar. Would that not just have been quite unpleasant for everybody? Well, yes. But then years from now I could look back and say, sure, he fucked me over and turned our whole life into a jagged, broken lie, but he still took a massive dump in his pants at his own wedding. I suppose that's why there's a popular saying, the best revenge is living well, or watching somebody soil their underwear. I mean, I admitted, I probably don't actually need to see him poo himself. Oliver glanced speculatively towards the happy couple.
Are you sure? It could be arranged.
How?
Laxatives in the champagne. There's a 24-hour chemist up the road.
I'd heard people say the key to a good relationship was still being able to surprise each other. But I think, maybe, it was an unexpected willingness to arrange public defecation. We shouldn't. And anyway, I'm over Miles. Not, like, in the romantic sense. I mean, definitely in the romantic sense, but also in the what he did no longer has power over me sense. And I'm not a therapist, but I think trying to make him shit his kecks isn't the best way to signal I've moved on, and I'm now a more complete human being. Oliver offered a conspiratorial smile.
What if I did it, so we had an excuse to leave?
How about, I suggested, we just leave? Because I'm done with this, and you're clearly hating every minute of it, and I'd rather spend time with, you know, you, than a bunch of people I've not spoken to in a decade.
I see no flaws in this plan. Although we should give our congratulations to Miles and Jojo before we go.
Oh my God, you can't even bail on a party impolitely.
8, said Oliver. You bail on parties better than me too.
Ideally, I would not have given our congratulations to Miles and Jojo. Except no. Fuck it. I'd made the choice to come here, and I was, if I said so myself, fucking nailing it. Okay, maybe not nailing it. Perhaps pinning it? Or putting it up with some of those little adhesive Velcro things? Either way, I was being mature and evolved and above it all. And if I was now hurtling towards a space in which tradition demanded that I kiss Miles on his smug, beardy cheeks and tell him that he and Jojo looked amazing and had thrown an amazing party, I could do it. I could do it with a smile on my face. Because none of this mattered anymore. Miles, I said, as we entered handshaking, cheek-kissing range. Jojo, congratulations. I'm so glad you could make it. Miles gave me an awkward half-embrace. Jojo nodded.
Yeah, it meant a lot to the both of us.
Wouldn't have missed it, I lied. This is my boyfriend, Oliver Blackwood. Oliver shook both their hands with the disarming formality of a man who was professionally formal and disarming.
Delighted.
I'm really glad you found somebody, Miles told me. I know things got pretty rough for you after we broke up.
They had indeed got pretty rough after we broke up. Or, to put it more accurately, they'd got fucking hellish after he'd completely betrayed me. But no, calm, centred, rising above. If you looked in the dictionary under over it, you'd have found a picture of me.
Yeah, got to admit I was in a bad place for a few years. But, Miles went on cheerfully, it's great to know we can be friends now.
Wait, what?
The party was loud, but it felt like everything had come to a crashing halt. I blinked. Then, when opening my eyes failed to reveal that the last 3 minutes had just been a dream about unmitigated gall, I blinked again. Since the world was resolutely failing to dissolve into fairy dust and sugar clouds, I figured I was stuck with it. Reaching out, I patted Miles companionably on the shoulder.
Let's be clear, I told him,
trying to match his air of casual matiness.
I'm glad you're happy. You and Jojo seem like you'll be great together. But we are never going to be friends, because you will always be the guy who sold me out for the price of a Toyota Supra.
Then I leaned in, kissed him on his beardy cheek, turned around, and left the wedding. Chapter 15. As mature and grown up and mostly over it as I'd been at Miles's wedding, the drive home was by far the best part of the evening. Now that I was no longer feeling the pressure to be supportive of my dickhead ex and his child bride, I could join in with Oliver in mocking their vows. We get it, you like each other. Their choice of venue. We get it, you're unconventional. And the guest list. We get it, you know a lot of artsy people and rich bastards. Although, that did make me feel a bit bad in retrospect when, 2 days later, Jojo showed up at my office.
"Chap to see you," explained Alex. "I mean, I say chap, but he is wearing rather a lot of makeup, and, well, one's supposed to be sensitive about these things, isn't one?"
The list of people it could have been was very short. Not that I had any idea what Jojo Ryan was doing at crap. "If it is who I think it is, Alex, then you're good. He's a chap."
"Pleased to hear it. Wouldn't want to call a chap when a chap was actually a chapess. Fearfully bad form to go around mischapping chaps, isn't it?"
"Oh, fearfully," I told him, and went through to see what the hell was going on. Unfortunately, Rhys Jones-Bowen had got there first.
"Hello,"
he was saying, directing his phone at himself and Jojo.
"Don't be alarmed. I'm just making some content for our social media. Perhaps you'd like to tell the aristocrats who you are and why you're visiting CRAPP today."
Jojo looked a little perplexed, but more patient than I think I would have been under the circumstances.
"I'm Jojo Ryan." He gave a camera-ready smile. "And I've come to speak to somebody who works here."
"I work here," offered Rhys. "How about speaking to me?"
"No, I mean a specific somebody."
"Ah, how about me?" asked Alex. "I'm pretty specific."
I got the slow, creeping sense that this was going to turn into one of those work moments. "Alex, you know he's here to see me. He already told you."
"Might have changed his mind," Alex pointed out. "Fellow can, you know."
"Alex, you don't even know who this guy is."
That made Alex do his indignant face.
"Yes, I do. He's Jojo Ryan."
"Who is?" I prompted.
"Who is here to see somebody who works for CRAPP, and frankly, Luke, I think it's very selfish of you to want to keep our visitor all to yourself."
Rhys looked around from his phone. Apparently the chat had been updating him.
"According to the aristocrats, Jojo Ryan is some kind of YouTuber."
Grinning, he extended a hand.
"Lovely to meet you, Jojo. Always nice to meet a fellow influencer."
I sighed. "You're not an influencer, Rhys."
"Excuse me, I have 974 followers."
He paused.
"Well, 972, really, because one of them is my Auntie Marjorie, and another is my Auntie Marjorie's python."
I wasn't going to ask. I wasn't going to ask. I wasn't going to ask. "Why does your Auntie Marjorie have a python? And why does it follow you on YouTube?"
"She's got a python," said Rhys,
and I instantly regretted my lack of self-control.
"Because she's allergic to cats, and because she got used to snakes when she was an exotic dancer. And he follows me on YouTube because Auntie Marjorie thinks he finds my voice calming."
There was so much to process there. "Your aunt was an exotic dancer?"
"Oh yes, very tasteful, minimal nudity."
I wasn't going to ask. I wasn't going to ask. I wasn't going to ask. "What does minimal nudity look like?"
"Honestly, Luke,"
Rhys gave me a look of admonition,
"asking a man what his aunt looks like naked is low even for you."
I wasn't, but there was no point protesting. I'd only dig myself into a deeper hole. "Actually," Jojo finally managed to get a word in, "I was here to talk to Luke about something a bit personal."
Alex gave me an apologetic look.
Ah, as it turns out, he hasn't changed his mind at all. Well played, old boy.
This was never a game. I made my best welcome to crap gesture at Jojo and led him through to the relative privacy of my office. To be honest, I wasn't thrilled to be leading him through to the relative privacy of my office, but having already made a scene at his wedding, I didn't want to compound it by making a scene at my place of work. Sitting down at my desk, I tried to psych myself up to apologise, which was going to be difficult, because in a lot of ways, I wasn't fucking sorry. I'd done more than my fair share of reconciliation bullshit by showing up in the first place. Expecting me to be, yes, we're bros now, was a bridge too far. And not like a little tiny bridge over a brook on a nice walk in the countryside. Like a giant fucking steel suspension bridge over a river of fuck right off. Come on, Luke, be the bigger man.
I'm sorry if I spoiled your big day, I tried. I know all the internet rules say you're not supposed to begin an apology with I'm sorry if, but it was what he was getting. Jojo laughed. It seemed like a sincere laugh, which was more than I'd expected.
Sweetheart, I was marrying the man I love in a big party filled with all my friends, plus a bunch of other people who aren't my friends but were still telling me how amazing I was. One slightly mean conversation wasn't going to ruin that.
Oh, okay. So why are you here?
Just to say...
Jojo stared down at his immaculately manicured nails.
Just to say that I suppose I get it?
Was I offended by that? I thought I was at least a little bit offended by that, because this guy was 12 and trying to tell me he knew what it was like to get betrayed and abandoned by the fucker he'd just married. Although, now I thought about it, Jojo wasn't that much older than I'd been when I'd dated Miles. Of course, Miles was now substantially older than he'd been when he'd dated me, which was why I felt justified taking the piss. The thing was, though, I hadn't felt young at the time. I'd felt pretty grown up. And here was Jojo, looking at me with the confidence of a young man who didn't quite realise how young he seemed to other people. See, this was the problem with trying to be a better human being to impress your boyfriend. You ended up having to be a better human to everybody.
Get what, exactly? I asked, warily.
He kept giving me his earnest early 20s face.
I've been on the internet since I was 16. I know you got the whole old media paparazzi treatment, and I'm sure that was crappy in a slightly different way, but I've had a million strangers telling me what they think of me every day since before I did my GCSEs.
Okay, that did sound awful. Although old Luke would have pointed out that the person who was financially compensated for Jojo's constant harassment was Jojo, not the person who dumped him.
So, Jojo went on, I do understand that what Miles did to you was fucking terrible. That's why I wanted you to come to the wedding.
When Miles had told me that he'd invited me to the wedding for Jojo's sake, I'd assumed he was just rightfully ashamed of how selfish it sounded otherwise.
Wait, you actually wanted me to come to the wedding?
Yeah.
I'd heard more sheepish yes, but only from actual sheep.
I think I just wanted to see... I don't know... that you were okay, I guess.
So you could tell yourself you weren't marrying the king of the arseholes?
It was probably an unfair comment, but I was trying to ration my enlightenment. He squirmed, in a way that didn't quite fit with the YouTube starlet persona.
So I could tell myself... I'd be okay too.
Ah.
That was more complicated than I was ready for.
You mean if he did the same to you?
It had been kind of the elephant in the room, and now I don't know. Had I shot the elephant? Had I said, "Hey, is that an elephant?" Was the elephant now rampaging around, stomping on things? I didn't think it was a stompy atmosphere. Perhaps we were just staring at an elephant and going, "Yep, that's an elephant, all right." There was a very, very long silence. At the end of the very, very long silence, Jojo said,
"Maybe."
And there went my last hope of resenting him, because, and this wasn't a self-esteem issue, Jojo had to be worth more than 50 grand, even accounting for inflation, and in his world, everything would happen at the speed of Twitter, instead of the speed of the tabloids.
"And I don't think he will," he continued. "Obviously, I wouldn't have married him if I thought he would."
At this point, I wasn't sure if he was trying to convince me or himself. I figured. Jojo picked at one of his perfect nails, leaving a little chip in it.
"And we've talked about it. We've talked about it so much. And Miles really is sorry, even if he's bad at showing it."
"Or saying it," old Luke pointed out, which Jojo completely blanked, either out of politeness, indifference, or the strain of being genuinely upset in the office of a relative stranger.
"It almost broke us up when I found out. I wasn't sure I could trust somebody who could do something like that."
"Probably too late to say this," I told him, "on account of that wedding we were both at. But probably you shouldn't trust somebody who can do something like that." Jojo gave a shrug.
"Probably not. But Miles was the first person I'd ever met who really felt like he was interested in me for me, not for who I was."
I sincerely tried to take that at face value and not assume that even if Miles wasn't interested in Jojo's YouTube celebrity, he definitely was interested in being married to a hot young twink.
"And the thing is," Jojo was saying, "if I'd walked away from that, I know I'd have regretted it. So..."
He flicked away a flake of glittery nail polish and met my eyes again.
"I took a chance."
What did he want?
A medal? "Congratulations. You gave an asshole a second chance."
"Better you than me."
"Better me than you," agreed Jojo quietly. "And he... I... It's been a long time. I never expected you to forgive him. I don't think he did either, really. I think he just got caught up in the moment."
That was Miles. Of course, the last time he'd got caught up in the moment, it had been the moment when he was selling... Oh, for fuck's sake, let it go. It's not about you anymore. "Good. Because I don't... I know I said I was sorry about your wedding, but I stand by everything I told him."
"And that's fine."
Jojo smiled at me, and it was weirdly comforting to be reassured by a man with no sense of irony.
"You weren't there for him. You were there for me, and you showed me that even if the worst happens, it'll be... I'll be fine."
He paused, and then added, in a slightly vulnerable way,
"You seem really happy, Luke."
"I am really happy," I replied, slightly too aggressively. "And, look, was I going to let myself say this? Okay, apparently I was. As much as I hate to admit it, I honestly don't think you've got anything to worry about. Like you said, it's been a long time, and... Miles is a different person now." Of course, that person was still a prick, but details.
"Really?"
Jojo looked at me with devastating hope in his eyes. "I wish I could say
Once a fuck-you-overer, always a fuck-you-overer, but... I sighed. Having to see your ex as a person sucked. Having to see the man your ex married as a person double sucked. For the last couple of years, I've been dating a wonderful guy, and he'd want me to say that everybody makes mistakes. And sometimes they make mistakes that hurt other people, but that doesn't mean they should be judged by those mistakes for the rest of their lives. I took a deep breath. This felt almost cleansing. Then again, I added, fool me once bitten leopards don't change their spots, so take your pick. Jojo laughed, and it sounded a bit sad. And that made me feel bad, because somebody that sparkly shouldn't be sad. I think I already have, he said. And I think, when it comes to love, it's worth rolling the dice. I was about to try and say something wise, or at least come up with something wise I could then decide not to say. But the door opened, and Reese stuck his head in.
I say, Jojo, I was just thinking, you wouldn't want to do a collaboration, would you?
To his credit, Jojo somehow managed not to tell him to fuck right off.
What sort of collaboration?
Well,
Reese had a wild eureka light in his eyes.
I've got a YouTube channel. You've got a YouTube channel. We could do a YouTube together.
Like what?
Asked Jojo, who seemed to be giving this proposal far more time than it probably objectively deserved.
I don't know. What do you YouTube about?
Jojo gestured at his face.
Makeup.
Oh, right. I suppose not everybody is as lucky as me.
Reese indicated his own face.
Would you believe I wake up like this?
Once again, Jojo demonstrated that he was far more polite than I am by not commenting. I believe it, I put in.
Tell you what, Reese continued, undaunted. How about we see if we can work on some dung beetle-themed makeup tips?
That,
Jojo gave Reese a surprisingly warm smile.
Sounds like an interesting challenge.
To my amazement, Jojo Ryan took Reese's details and promised to be in touch to talk about the collaboration. Of course, promising to do something and actually doing it were two very different things. Just look at my dad and his marriage vows, or for that matter, any other promise he had ever made. But I had a perhaps naive sense that Jojo might make good on the offer. I left work that day, not confused exactly, but a bit shaken, with something Jojo had said buzzing around my head like the tune to an 80s disco classic whose name I couldn't remember. It's worth rolling the dice. Which wasn't Oprah, but it was something. Chapter 16. Here's the thing. I loved Oliver. I really did. But there was no getting away from the fact we had irreconcilable Saturday differences. In my world, a Saturday was for sleeping until noon, having sex until 2, or, you know, half 12, depending on how close to 30 I was feeling, and then hanging out with friends or visiting my mum, or if I was in a super domestic mood, curling up on the sofa with a movie. Oliver's ideal Saturday involved lying in until 9 at the latest, then going for a run or to the gym, following it up with a nutritious breakfast before doing something disgustingly productive. And some days, I could lure him with my wiles into a more Luke-friendly set of activities, like cuddling and or blowjobs. Unfortunately, today was not one of those days. And when I staggered downstairs a little after 1, I found Oliver on his knees on the kitchen floor, and not in a fun way. His protein shaker was drying on the rack, and his hair was still damp and tousled from his post-run shower, both of which were signs of an Oliver highly committed to productivity. Plus, he was wearing his virtuous grey sweatpants
and the no longer suitable for work but I am too ethical to throw clothes away shirt that he reserved for cleaning. The marigolds were also a giveaway. I groaned.
Good afternoon, Lucien, he said cheerfully.
I groaned again.
What are you doing?
He gave me a look of what I hoped was mock disappointment, but given how seriously he took cleaning, I couldn't be sure.
Are you telling me you've forgotten what day it is?
Saturday? And definitely not... Shit! Is it your birthday?
Yes, he told me. It's my birthday. This is what I always do on my birthdays.
You think you're joking, but I wouldn't put it past you.
He huffed out a put-upon sigh.
It's the first Saturday in July.
And? I asked.
So I'm cleaning my cupboards, as I did last year, if you recall.
Oliver, you have cleaned so many things, I didn't realise I was supposed to be putting them on a calendar. He set down his bottle of multi-purpose surface cleaner with a condemnatory click.
As I thought you'd have learned by now, cleaning is a lot easier when you do it regularly, which is itself easier when you have a routine.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I knelt down beside him. Clearly, it's much better if you leave it until all your spoons start sticking together and you hate yourself, and then get a nice boyfriend and stealth move into his place.
And what happens, he twitched an eyebrow at me, when my spoons start sticking together?
We'll both have to find a new boyfriend, and we can move into his place together. He readjusted his marigolds uncertainly.
I'm not sure that's a sustainable strategy. And while I have no objection to polyamory in theory, I don't think it would suit me in practice.
Leaning in, I kissed him on the nose. Then I faithfully promise that no matter how sticky your teaspoons get, I will still want to be with you, and only you.
I'm not sure I want to ask,
began Oliver. Apparently I'd successfully deflected his relationship anxiety by triggering his hygiene anxiety.
But how do teaspoons become sticky?
It's not a sex thing, I protested quickly.
I wasn't assuming it was a sex thing. I'd be less concerned if it was a sex thing.
Oh, God. I was disgusting. I was the creature from the disgusting lagoon. I think, I offered, it's because most of my cooking involved oil, and then if you don't change your washing up water properly, you're washing everything in oily water and it comes out with kind of a, you know, oily film that dries, and it gets... Oliver had gone pale.
I think you should probably stop there.
Are you going to dump me now? He thought about it for an unflatteringly long time.
Tragically, Lucien, I will still love you, even if you make my spoon sticky.
He paused.
Having said which, do not make my spoon sticky.
It's not a lifestyle choice. It's just a consequence of other lifestyle choices. Laughing, Oliver squirted the cupboard again and started to scrub with a pre-designated surface scrubber. I knew it was pre-designated because they lived in a separate, subtly different pot from the washing-up sponges, and I'd once made the mistake of trying to clean a plate with one. Embarrassingly, it was one of our worst ever arguments. As he scrubbed, his head and shoulders disappeared inside the cupboard, leaving me with ample opportunity to appreciate his arse, which, sweatpants or no, was sort of jutting up perkily and moving back and forth in time with his very diligent cleaning.
Is that what you're doing?
He asked from the interior of the kitchen unit. Staring at your arse?
Oh, that's what you're doing. But no, I mean... stealth moving.
Honestly, I'd been hoping he wouldn't notice that. Well, your place is bigger than mine, and it's nicer, and you wash your sheets, and... you're in it.
I'm glad I merited some mention among the list of utilities. To be fair, you can come round to my flat. Your dishwasher can't. You should get a dishwasher, Lucien, he said, somewhat predictably. They're actually more ecologically efficient than hand washing. I could, but I've gone for the even more environmentally friendly strategy of using someone else's dishwasher, thus saving the upfront environmental impact of installation and the long-term environmental impact of us running two separate dishwashers. Oliver sat back on his heels. Even before we met, I never ran my dishwasher at half load. I did that one time, and I said I was sorry. I couldn't tell if this was going really off track or really on track. But it does sort of make my point. If I had a dishwasher in my flat, I'd run it at half load all the time. I'd have to. I've only got two plates.
You could always buy more plates, Oliver suggested.
True. Or I could just stay here and use yours. Swapping the designated scrubber for a carefully rationed piece of paper towel, Oliver returned to the cupboard.
I suppose that is the best strategy from a strict carbon footprint perspective.
The scrubbing continued.
And, well, since, as you observe, you've rather stumbled into living here anyway, if you wanted to... Well, there's a certain logic in making it an official arrangement.
The part of me that was terrified of commitment, betrayal, and finding myself 10 years down the line telling Oliver to fuck off at his wedding, gave a little yelp. The part of me that was terrified of blowing a good thing gave a different yelp. I let them yelp at each other for a bit and tried to distract myself by turning my attention to Oliver's arse.
That is,
Oliver went on,
if it isn't to... And of course you wouldn't have to give up your flat if you didn't want to. It's just, I don't think you like your flat very much.
Since I originally got it with Miles, no, I really don't. My brain was still in crisis mode, which meant all it could think of were endless variations of worst-case scenarios. But that could happen to you as well. What if something goes wrong with us and then you start to hate this house, which you love and clean all the time, because you used to share it with this guy who cheated on you? Emerging abruptly from the cupboard, Oliver stared at me wide-eyed.
Lucien, are you trying to tell me you're cheating on me?
What? I cried. No, it's the kind of thing I would do. I mean, it's not the kind of thing I would do. It's the kind of thing the kind of person I am would do if they were going to fuck up their relationship with the kind of person you are.
Oliver took a deep breath. You are not that kind of person. You just worry you might be every time somebody likes you.
That was at once reassuring and embarrassing. Stop knowing me, I whined.
It's a little late for that. I have, as you've observed, actually been living with you for at least a year and a half.
He paused.
And as for the house, if it came to it, I'd get a new one. And I'd have more money for the deposit because you'd have been paying half the mortgage.
I stared at him helplessly. Oh, God. You really mean it, don't you? You want me to, like, move in and shit and keep stuff here and...
You already keep quite a lot of stuff here.
No, I said, decisively. I've left stuff here. It's a different vibe.
You've left stuff here in increasing quantities for nearly 2 years.
That's not emotionally significant. I left a pair of formal shoes at Priya's after my graduation and she's still got them. Oliver's mouth was doing that thing where he tried to pretend he wasn't smiling.
I find that very easy to believe. But I don't think you have an entire drawer of variously salacious underwear at any of your friends' houses.
He was right. I didn't. This was unintentional. But it was real. It was very real. And it had always been very real. You couldn't get realer than a drawer of pants. And you... trust me to... I made a gesture that frankly could have encompassed anything. Of course I trust you, Lucien. For a start, as I've said many times, you've already been... He imitated my gesture. I made a noise, because all my internal yelping had decided to come out of my brain through my throat. Drawing off his marigolds with deliberate care, like he was satisfying a really specific but highly mundane fetish, Oliver took my hands in his. I know this seems frightening, and it seems like a lot, but it is not a lot. It is exactly what we're already doing. I made another noise. It's no different, he went on, in his gentlest voice, than when we were first dating. Nothing actually changed. We just agreed to start calling it something different. My hand-holding was veering into clutching. That's true. You still make me happy, Lucien. You are still everything I want. And a lot of things I couldn't have imagined wanting.
Thanks.
In a good way. We don't have to do this. We can move at whatever pace you like. But you should know that I am yours, more truly than I have ever been anyone's. Because when I'm with you, I'm me, not someone I think I should be. And I'll be with you however you want, for as long as you'll have me. Only Oliver would say something like that in the middle of scrubbing his kitchen cabinets. And maybe that was why I could listen to him, when I sometimes couldn't even listen to myself. Why he made me feel safe and hopeful and worth something when I had a bunch of reasons not to. Not going to lie, it was kind of annoying. Because he was right, again. I could do this. We could do this. We were already doing this. We had something strong and right and special, and I'd be more of a bellend than usual if I didn't accept that, cherish it, hold on to it. I opened my mouth to tell him, yes, of course I'd move in with him. I couldn't imagine anything better. Except then, somewhere at the back of my mind, a tiny glitter bomb of a boy in internet-friendly makeup said, it's worth rolling the dice. And so, instead, what came out of my mouth was, we should get married.